The VO Meter, measuring your voiceover progress. Whether you're a veteran voice actor, just starting out, or don't even know how to set a level, we're here to help you avoid the pitfalls along your voiceover path to success. The VO Meter is brought to you by voice actor websites, Voice123, Studio Bricks, Global Voice Acting Academy, JMC Demos, and Sennheiser. The VO Meter is produced in part using Source Connect, made by source-elements.com. And now, your hosts, Paul Stefano and Sean Daly.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to episode 102 of the VO Meter.
Measuring your voice over progress. Today, we're featuring an interview with audiobook narrator, editor, and director Jennifer Blum. We'll talk to her about her narrating career and her company, Reaping Audio, and how she helps other narrators with their production work.
But before we get to that, it's time for our VO Meter reference levels.
VoiceOver Extra brings you the VO Meter reference levels. Seriously, guys, that's the best you could come up with? Hey, it's your show.
All right, awesome. So, Sean, what's been happening in your voiceover world?
Well, kind of same old, same old. Been doing my regular e-learning projects. A couple fun Masters of the Mini Comics projects that you can view on YouTube right now. I got cast as a superhero on Casting Call Club as the Blue Beetle, so that was fun.
Really?
yeah, it was cool. It was like kind
fan,
of a...
fan thing or officially
Yeah, it was
DC?
A fan thing. Okay. It was a fan project for now, but it was a lot of fun, and it's always good to be able to work with, like, a director in person. I'm a big fan of directed sessions. Mm-hmm. So, had that, and...
Is that in Spanish at all? I haven't actually seen the movie, but given that...
Oh, no. So, this is... I actually played the... So, that's a good question. So, if you're a DC Comics nerd like me, you might know that there's actually three Blue Beetles. The most current one is the Mexican one, Jaime Reyes. And then the previous version, it was the one that I played. So that was Ted Kord, right? So that's like, you've got this kind of three generations of Blue Beetle mentors passing the torch.
Okay,
and I was the middle
one.
No, it's all right. You're a little nerd bite for today.
I'm only familiar with the new movie with Zolo Maladengua.
So I heard it's like, yeah, it's perfectly acceptable, but it's like the 30th superhero movie we've had in 10 years. So it's kind of, they're outstaying their welcome. And this is from a superhero fan. But anyways, so that was a lot of fun. On the GVA front, we have a webinar coming up with Randall Ryan on voice acting for video games. So that's really cool.
Yeah, I saw that. That's exciting.
Yeah, no, I love Randy. I've worked with him a couple of times on some of his remote video game stuff. And he really, like, he's really good at putting the actor at ease and kind of getting you to pull out stuff that you had no idea was there. So,
that's a sign of a good director.
Absolutely. No, so I'm really looking forward to that. And other than that, just been, like I said, doing my regular e-learning projects and helping talent kind of break into voice acting through Rekindle and GVA. So it's been a fun month for that. What about you?
So I've got a couple of things going on. I also am doing some ongoing e-learning projects basically every week now, live directed sessions, which is fun because you get it all done in one session. You don't have to go back and do a bunch of back and forth through email or Slack or some other file sharing site. You can just get it all done at once. I have a new audiobook that's out that I produced, didn't narrate, although my name is in the credits because I did the About the Authors. It's the third by Father Michael White and Thomas Corcoran, who are the pastor and assistant at my local church, the parish I belong to. I've talked about this a lot, but I did two books with them earlier. The first one was in my home studio where they came and recorded in my whisper room. The second was at the church where they had built a new facility and had this nice control room that they use to monitor their live stream, and it also is sound treated. So we use that. And then for this third book, we did the same thing. That just came out in between the time we did the last episode with Matt and now, and it's called Rebuilt Faith, a Handbook for Skeptical Catholics. So if you're into religion and want to know about how to rekindle your Catholic faith, it's a good book. You can check that out now on Audible. Again, it's by Michael White and Tom Corcoran, or you can look up my name. It'll show up as well. Then I'm doing a lot of live announcing pretty much every couple of days or every other day. I'm doing my first swim meet this week. I didn't even know they had announcers for that at the college level, but I'm going to the Naval Academy. Go figure. They should be pretty good at swimming, you would think. And
they rely on the boats for that, don't you know?
Yeah. You didn't know that that's actually how they power the submarines, which is a bunch of sailors hanging on with their hands and pumping with their legs behind it? Yeah.
Like a bunch of swimming hamsters.
Yeah. Isn't that how you ended up in Japan? Wasn't your dad in the Navy?
He was, yeah, actually. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so a lot of commonalities there. Big Navy supporters here. But I'm doing the Naval Academy swim meet on Saturday, and that'll be interesting because I have not done that before. And hopefully they'll have me back for another one after they see the job I do. And the last thing is I want to mention that I'm part of the VO Repertory Company. I think I've mentioned this before, but we released, actually several weeks ago, and I should have mentioned it at the last episode, a series called Magic Rocks from Hell. It's a comedy audio
really?
Drama that's been going on for the last couple of weeks. We have four episodes out now, and the fifth one should be dropping next week. And it's a sort of like a Cannonball Run meets Scooby-Doo adventure. So these two morons, and that's how we describe them, that are traveling across the country, and they stumble across these rocks that have these magic powers, but all is not as it seems, and they encounter a cast of crazy characters that interrupt their journey and make things go horribly wrong. Again, sort of like a Scooby-Doo episode. It stars Ken Foster, mm-hmm. Steve Wines, Tara Langella, Susie P., Daniel Azarian, and me as the various characters, and it's produced by Daniel and Michael Kinsey. And it's really freaking fantastic. We have some animation behind it, so if you get a chance, go to vorep.net. I think you'll have some fun with that.
Yeah, I dig it. It reminds me kind of like Home Movies meets Rick and Morty, at least the animation style.
It's really cool. A little bit like that. And it's good timing because Rick and Morty just had their new episode released with a new cast. So hopefully we'll get some traction out of that too.
Awesome. Well, congrats.
Thank you.
And one other thing. I think I mentioned this a few weeks ago, but I'm actually going to be making my first con appearance. That's kind of crazy. I'm actually going to be the Toastmaster and leading a few panels on voice acting and recording for voice acting and podcasting at WindyCon, which is in Chicago, and it's coming up November 9th through 11th. So if we have any fans that are in the Chicago or Illinois area, I'd love to see you. So be working with alongside a bunch of sci-fi writers and cosplayers and getting to introduce them. And like I said, leading a panel on getting into the voice acting industry, as well as how to record, whether you're trying to create your own podcast, do your own projects, or if you're trying to be a voice talent. So that's coming up in a couple weeks, and I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah,
it's going to
awesome.
Be like the biggest event that I... Yeah, it's nuts. I had, speaking of Japan, an old friend of mine that I worked with at these English summer camps when I was in my 20s. She kind of does the con circuit as a talent handler or talent manager. And so she's like, one of these days, Sean, I'm going to get you into the con circuit, because she knew I wanted to be a voice acting even then. So so eventually she's like, I found it. You want to be our Toastmaster for this event? I'm like, okay.
That's awesome.
So we'll see. Yeah, it should be fun. It should be a lot of fun. I haven't done any public speaking like this in a long time, but I'm looking forward to it.
I'm sure you'll fall naturally into it. It's not unlike what you do for GVAA, just in front of an audience instead of a camera.
Exactly. And that stuff is like, I don't know, I miss it. I used to do stage when I was in college and high school, and like that adrenaline, there's nothing like it.
So that's it for VO Meter Reference Levels. We will get to our interview with Jennifer Blom right after our...
Questionable gear purchase.
So, have you done anything stupid with your wallet this month, Sean?
Well, this time I've been very good, actually, because I'm trying to let's see. I don't want to spill the beans yet, but I'm saving up for some expensive VO investments. But anyways, I did have a few, I guess you could say, questionable gear sales yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
So some of you know, I live near a certain notorious center for guitars. And
yeah, the Banjo
I went
Emporium,
in with a bunch,
as Dan Leonard calls it.
The Banjo Emporium, yeah. as our friends at VOBS like to say. But anyways, so, and it's actually a pretty good one. I mean, Bellingham's a very artsy city with lots of musicians, so the staff are actually knowledgeable there for one thing. And anyways, I was just trying to, like, do some autumn cleaning and clear up the studio closet and get rid of some extra mics and interfaces. And if you've ever bought from me, I try to keep things in really good condition. It's like very like new or gently used. But anyway, so I bring this stuff in thinking I'll at least, like, I don't know, make half or a third of what I paid for all this stuff. And they're like, yeah, we'll take one out of the five things you brought and we'll give you $30 for it. Wow. But we'll sell it for $80. And I was just like, I appreciate your candor. I was like, I'll take my chances on reverb, thank you. And they're like, you'll probably have much better luck there. I was like, again, I appreciate the transparency, but wow. It was just funny to me. But yeah, so like, it depends. It's really funny too, because I just wanted to offload stuff. I wasn't really looking to make a profit. I was kind of surprised they didn't want it. But anyways, like, back to the interwebs I go.
What was it? Can you say?
It was like, it was my Audient ID 4 version 1. It was like the Rode Reporter mic. That was the one mic that they wanted to take, really? By the way, for like the $30. And it was just like, no, that's not even half of what I paid for it.
Wow, so they didn't want the Audient,
but,
huh?
Yeah, I was really surprised. Maybe because it's like, again, it was the first version that came out. So it's like maybe 6 or 7 years old at this point. But I mean, it's rock solid. Like, I've heard some people who like had one of the newer models and it had problems after a few years. But this guy has just been a stalwart. So maybe it's because I don't use it as my primary interface and just had more longevity that way. But it's a great unit. I love like the sort of the more granular metering mm-hmm. that it has. Like, it had in multiple colors instead of kind of just the four white LEDs they transitioned to make more room on the UI. I don't know. I didn't want to have to go back to the internet to sell my stuff, but it's probably what's for the best.
Yeah, I guess, as we'll talk about in a few minutes, all these companies have moved on to so many generations. It's hard to believe that it's been that long, but kind of like cell phones. Imagine trying to resell a 6-year-old cell phone at this point, or an iPhone.
You're getting pennies back.
Yeah. So I guess audio gear has kind of reached that point as well.
Well, totally. Well, speaking about iterations and versions, you got a new piece of gear that you wanted to talk about.
I do. I have a piece of gear from Focusrite that's not even available to order yet. It's only available for pre-orders. This is super secret stuff. I have
Fancy.
In my hands, and you've been listening to it for this podcast, the Focusrite Scarlett 4i4 Generation 4. So like we talked about with the Audient, several generations have passed, and now we're on the fourth generation of the Scarlett line, and it is vastly improved, let me tell you. First of all, let's go over the specs from the website. It comes with two microphone preamps, and the preamps are improved. It has two instrument inputs. It has four line inputs. It has phantom power switchable for either input, and the inputs are combo jacks for either XLR or quarter-inch inputs, so that's cool. It has four line outputs, only one headphone output, which is my one complaint, but we'll get to that later. It has loopback built-in. It has MIDI. It's connected by USB Type-C, and depending on your computer, it may be able to use that, but it also has a power adapter, and I found out immediately that I needed the power adapter because the software told me. I plugged it in, and it said right away, your computer ain't powerful enough, buddy, you gotta plug it in. So I did that. I don't really know the level that it needs to be powered by the motherboard, but on my computer, it wasn't the case on a Mac Mini, so your mileage may vary. Mm-hmm. It supports 44.1 all the way up to 192 kilohertz sample rates. Let's see. Frequency response of 20 to 20 kilohertz. Dynamic range of 115 dB. Where's the gain? I need the gain output. It says 69 dB mic gain range on the promotional part of the page. So that's the part I noticed right away, is that the gain on the inputs is much hotter. So, for instance, just a test, I plugged in my Sennheiser 835, which I'm using to talk on this podcast. I don't usually use it. This is one of my live announce mics, but figured for reference, I'd plug it into first the AG06 that I usually use and then the Focusrite. On the AG06, I had to put it at basically 330 on the clock to get any sort of signal, and that's peaking at about negative 12. And then for the same level around negative 12, on the focus rate, it's only about 1 o'clock on the clock. So a lot more gain on the Scarlett 4i4 fourth gen than there is on the AG06, which is to be expected because it's one of the things they talk about improving. It also has an auto gain feature, which has been coming up in a lot of their products. Like I noticed they had it in the Bowcaster too. It's a feature where you can press a button on first of all, it has a control software, Focusrite Control 2. So that's a software that lets you control all the features of the interface remotely on your computer with a graphical user interface, which I like a lot. I like the ability to do both. I've talked about this a lot, but I like having that ability to control virtually because my interface is not in the booth with me. It's outside, and I run a long XLR cable to my mic. So having the ability to control both inputs, outputs, the loopback, the headphones, basically everything. I can mute, I can pan channels, I can combine channels into mono or separate them in the stereo, and it has 3 separate mixes available in the software as well. So I forget why I brought this up. Why did I mention this? Oh, the auto gain.
I see a mute button, but I can't. Ah, okay. Yeah.
So the auto gain feature is available to be selected on the Focusrite Control software, as well as ClipSafe, which I haven't tried, but let's give that a try. A clip is sort of a limiter, a built-in limiter that allows you to record at high levels without clipping. Let's see if I can give that a try. All right, so I'm going to put this on, and then I'm talking normally, and then, what if I get really loud?
You didn't clip.
You're right. Yeah, it got up there. I could see it in the yellow, and I could see it peaking at like -3, just basically cut it off. So, yeah, it must work like a built-in limiter, and it allows you to get loud on sessions without having to clip. So that's a really nice feature that I haven't really used before, but I could see taking advantage of, especially like we talked about doing some video game auditions.
Mm-hmm. No, that's great. And it's really surprising to see some of these more advanced features in a sub-$300 interface.
Yeah, the price is listed at $279 on their website, $279.99 retail. Again, it's not available yet. It says you can pre-order and orders will be dispatched. You know, they're from England. From November. And you can get it then. It has meters on the dials like it had before, like the other versions had. So each input has a meter on it, color-coded. And you can select on the front of the unit between each one. And again, the selectable 48-volt phantom power is huge for me because a lot of interfaces in this range, including the one I normally use, the Yamaha AG06, you can only have yes or no for phantom power, and it floods to both inputs, which is not great. If you have a mic that can't have it, like a ribbon mic, you could destroy it by having phantom power when it doesn't need it. So having the selectable phantom power is cool. And the last thing I'll mention is it comes with a ton of software. So it comes with Ableton Live Lite or 3 months of Pro Tools and the Hitmaker Expansion Bundle, which is a bunch of plugins they have, including a Marshall amplifier, emulator, a channel strip.
We got the Focusrite Red 2 and 3 plugin suite. Let's see, Auto-Tune, some, I already mentioned the amp emulators. Let's see, Vox Doubler. Let's see, some keys and drums if you do virtual instruments, but possibly not things you might use as a voice talent, but some nice-to-haves.
Yeah, one thing that caught my eye was the channel strip. It's the ISA channel strip that probably sounds really good. I haven't used it before, but I would be interested in checking it out, so maybe I'll take advantage of that. It's a really cool piece of kit. It's a little bit chunkier than the old ones, which I guess because they cram more into it, which is to be expected, but it's still a metal chassis, all metal chassis, and the knobs feel really good. They have, I don't remember this on the old one.
It looks a little bit more compact than the previous version, too.
I think width-wise, but it's a bigger height, so it's kind of like a kind of like a brick, actually.
Yeah, it does. It looks a little bit taller, but less wide, like you said.
Yeah, exactly.
And it looks like they changed the LED halos, I believe they call them, for the metering around the inputs and the outputs. Before, it used to be like a solid green line when you had healthy levels, and then it would be a solid yellow. But now it's kind of more granular. Like it starts off green on one side and gets more yellow and red as you increase the gain. So that might be more easy to read for some. I know some of my colorblind friends have always complained about this style of metering, but hopefully it's a little bit easier to read than some of their previous iterations.
No, it hadn't occurred to me. The one thing I want to mention on the knobs, I don't think this was there before, but each of the knobs has grooves in it, so you can get a better feel for it, and they turn with much more precision than I remember before. It seemed like before they were kind of
The term is knurling.
Really? That's a term? Those grooves?
Yeah, knurling. That sort of that textured dimpling, like metal dimpling. And that's another thing. They replaced the dials with metal with metal dials.
Yeah, they're metal now. That's why they're able to do that knurling. First time.
Like a dumbbell has knurling to increase the grip.
Makes sense. Yeah. So that definitely helps. I noticed when I was grabbing onto the headphone output, it definitely is easier to grab onto, especially if you're trying to do it in the dark or while you're focusing on something else. You can just reach over and feel it instead of having to look and see where you are on the dial. So that's cool too. So I really like this thing. Definite improvement over the previous generations. Not that the other ones were bad, but I can see where they really took their time to address some of the concerns people had and made it really user-friendly and still prosumer. If you know what you're doing, especially if you take advantage of those plugins, you could really have this do everything you needed to do.
Absolutely. Kudos to Focusrite. I feel like they're really trying to push the boundaries of like entry-level gear and really give you a lot of wonderful features at a great price.
Yeah, also, cheers to them for reaching out to the voiceover community, because not every manufacturer has any interest or has a lot of interest or sometimes any interest in our community. And Dan Hughley, who has sent us not only this, but previously the Vocaster 2 and the Vocaster mic, has been really receptive to our request to get this out there and talk about it for the voiceover community. So again, cheers to Focusrite for that.
Well, that wraps up our questionable gear purchases. We'll be right back with Jennifer Blum after these messages.
How many times does this happen to you? You're listening to the radio when this commercial comes on, not unlike this one, and this guy starts talking, not unlike myself.
Or maybe it's a woman that starts talking, not unlike myself, and you think to yourself, geez, I could do that.
Well, mister, well, missy, you just got one step closer to realizing your dream as a voiceover artist, because now there's Global Voice Acting Academy. All the tools and straight from the hip, honest information you need to get on a fast track to doing this commercial yourself.
Well, not this one exactly.
Classes, private coaching, webinars, home studio setup, marketing and branding help, members only benefits like workouts, rate negotiation advice, practice scripts, and more. All without the kind of hype you're listening to right now. Go ahead, take our jobs from us. We dare you.
Speak for yourself, buddy. I like what I do.
And you will too when you're learning your craft at Global Voice Acting Academy. Find us at globalvoiceacademy.com.
Because you like to have fun.
Studio Brix designs and creates the highest performing portable sound isolation booths. Their professionally perfected acoustics enhances your performance and takes your recording to their maximum quality from your home studio. Forget about managing noise conflicts with your neighbors and family. Pursue your passion for voiceover on your own time and on your own terms.
Hey, Paul. Did you know Voice123, the largest online marketplace for voice actors, just celebrated its 20th year anniversary?
Whoa, really? That's amazing. Doesn't really surprise me, though. I've used Voice123 since the beginning of my career. I remember way back in my first year where I booked a job as a hypnotist. I actually got to say, "You are getting very sleepy," on a radio ad. The whole thing was super easy. They even paid me right away for the audition and said that was all they needed.
I've been a member of Voice123 for years as well. I've always enjoyed their upfront policies, ability to contact clients directly, and their commitment to the voiceover industry.
Totally. CEO Rolf Veldman has appeared on the show before, and in every interaction I've had with him and the company, I've felt a sense of trust, like they really care.
Well, if you want a great place to find your VO niche and find yourself as a voice actor, visit voice123.com for more information.
Now, VO Meter listeners can also get 15% off premium tier memberships. For more information, visit our website and click on the Click Here to Save 15% banner on our sponsors page.
Voice123, speak for yourself. Hi, everybody, and thank you for joining us for the interview portion of this episode. Our guest today is Jennifer Blum. Jennifer is a SAG-AFTRA audiobook narrator living in Astoria, Queens, New York, with more than 70 audiobooks to her name and more than 5 years' experience. She has a background in theater, both on stage and behind the scenes. Her neutral North American accent lends itself to many different styles, including performing ages teen through 50 plus in romance, sci-fi fantasy, mystery thriller, and true crime nonfiction titles. When not narrating, she can be found sitting in the audience of a Broadway show, editing and directing audiobooks, or singing up a storm at karaoke. So please put your hands and voices together in welcoming our lovely guest, Jennifer. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm just imagining like sound effects like at this point of the program, just like random applause tracks. Is that what you guys
like
are going to do?
Like lightning and thunder about the
lightning
karaoke
and thunder and voices, like choral music, Baroque style, maybe.
Excellent. Ooh, good shout out.
Probably that requires way too much work, but I like the idea.
The budget's probably not there yet. Okay. But, yeah. You know, this is what I'm envisioning. So if everyone could just close their eyes for a second and hear that.
Let us all do a...
Yeah! The crowd goes wild!
Exactly.
Give us a soundscape.
A whole soundscape. Hilarious. Indeed. I'm doing great. How are you both?
We're awesome. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
It's
glad
a pleasure to,
be here. To
have you. So we've met in person and been to a couple conferences together.
Yeah.
I'm glad to have you on the show because you have a varied toolkit that I think will be beneficial to our listeners. So before we do that, though, let's talk about how you got started. How did you get into this crazy thing we call VO and audiobooks?
Yeah, definitely. So I started working in theater, as mentioned, and really find the creative pursuit in all of its, you know, different facets of being a storyteller vital to my existence. As we'll get into later, I also find the technical part super important to me. So I have to find that happy balance or else Jen's not a happy camper. And now the whole world will know I talk about myself in the third person. It's fine.
She's a super villain. Beware.
So my take over the world plan was to have a good mix of creative and technical pursuits. That being said, I moved to the city about 7 years ago. About a year into my stint here, I got hit by a car. I was working at a financial tech startup and was two blocks from my house and got hit with a lovely hit and run accident. Couldn't use my leg for like 6 months.
Wow.
So had to work from home a lot. So like, that prepared me for what came a couple of years thereafter where we all were at home all the time. What that did let me have is I had some of the basic equipment for VO already purchased because I was going to add it as kind of a behind the scenes thing and glossing over a bunch of stuff. But the same week I got hit by the car, I found out that my company was going to help pay for a software coding boot camp for me because I was working my way up from my client experience role into more of a technical role with the company. So right as I was recovering and coming back for 3 months, I also did a boot camp for that at night. So my original intent was to stay with that company. But then I had to make a choice. On my website, there like is a little blog post about this, but turning points was a pretty big thing for me. And getting hit by the car kind of let me know that the path I was on wasn't really fitting anymore, and I was missing the creative part of my life. So I took that as a sign to step back from that role and pursue creative pursuits, which audiobooks was kind of my gateway in because I couldn't use my leg. So performing on stage would have been difficult, but I could be a storyteller in that capacity. I'm happy to say I can walk. I think Paul can be a testament to that. He's seen me. But while I was recovering, it was a good thing to keep me sane, if that makes sense.
I love how you said the path you were on showed you it was wrong by sending a car careening down.
Right. It just like pushed me off course. It's like, you go.
not all of us have that.
Now
that
that's
big
glass
of a sign.
Half full mentality.
Yes. Every supervillain needs an origin story, and mine is getting hit by a car. I don't know why we went down that road, but we are now officially down that road of me being a supervillain.
I love it.
I'm sorry if anyone knows me and thinks that that's true. Okay. perfect. Moving on.
Get you a nice cloak.
In what color? Because I do have a couple already.
Okay. What's your favorite?
I'm kidding. That was a joke. I don't have
clothes. Green or purple? I mean...
I think purple, right? You have to have the royal purple going on streaks.
Well, if you're going to be queen of the world, of course.
so that was related.
What exactly was your biggest challenge transitioning into VO from both the stage work and your full-time work?
So my full-time work kind of made it easy because I had to make a choice. And so I chose to jump in. Basically, I got kind of a severance pay for my work for like 3 months. And so I took that opportunity to jump into VO land. And spoiler alert, I made very little my first year. I don't want anyone to think this was a get-rich-quick scheme, because it was not. But it takes, you know, effort. So if I had advice, which I know we'll get to later, but my first little bit of a nugget of wisdom is, if you have a day job that will help you grow in this industry, whichever realm you want to go down, use the day job for as long as you can until VO pulls you away from it. There's no harm in having multiple streams of income. Don't, you know, think the grass is greener on the other side and make irresponsible decisions from someone who did. Kettle black. No, I made a decision for me, and everyone will have their decisions to make. For me, at the time, it made sense to take the leap of faith. So that's what I did. But the hardest part was to stay the course. Because I had made that huge leap of faith, money started to dwindle after a while, and just knowing that it would come. So I said yes to a lot of things, such as doing the other streams of work that I do within audiobooks. And so my paths kind of, split out, but they all kind of merged back together. I'm still just me, one woman show, but I have had a lot of things growing at the same time because of necessity.
Yeah, actually, it sounds a lot like my story. Sean's too, to an extent. We both have varied, related, or adjacent streams of income that help us stay afloat, basically. And I think that's probably becoming more and more a thing for everybody in the industry. That's my guess, at least.
I
think
agree.
It's an untold truth of being a creative freelancer, really. It's not just one job. It's a whole bunch of jobs under an umbrella.
100%. Yeah. And it's interesting because, to that point, a lot of people think, and I fell victim to this too. I, for a very long time, did not tell anyone that I worked on other aspects of audiobook because I was under the assumption. Now, everyone knew me as the Reaper girl first, because I knew Reaper really well, my audio workstation of choice, my DAW. But basically, everyone at my first APA conference, APAC, I went and everyone's like, oh, you're the girl that answers all the Reaper questions. I'm like, I'm also a narrator. So so I started, you know, at that point, transitioning to having people talk to me like I was a narrator first, right? Because I was worried people were going to stop wanting to cast me if they were thinking about me in these other walks of life while I was building a brand, right? Now, people know that I direct and people have outed me as their engineer at Macmillan and they have done all of the things that I avoided for like 3 or 4 years. But at this point, I have accepted all parts of myself, knowing that I still kind of siphon off. Like, you know, I don't work for all the different companies as a director yet because, I mean, if someone's listening, I won't say no if it's a good offer, you know what I mean? But but right now, I work pretty exclusively with Macmillan in those capacities because there's just not enough time in the day to fit everybody in.
Well, let's talk about that more specifically. What are the other relatable activities you're doing, the other income streams, and who do you work for?
Okay, so I'll give you a little bit of my background and my technical stuff. I first worked with Ty Def. I don't know if you've had Ty on the show, but he's great. But I worked with him on doing role edits for Penguin Random House, among others, but basically doing post-production, which means basically you take out, for if people are listening that not sure what a role edit is, you take out the bad takes. So when they're recording, they don't stop and reset the cursor and do punch and roll. They basically just mark the script while there's like an author read, for example. And then you cut out the bad takes and just leave one seamless version of the script. So I did that first with Ty Def. And then I had always been editing my own projects. And that kind of started spreading. So then I started working for other people in post-production. And this was very close to when I had started narrating, because I taught myself my Well, I taught myself Reaper really quickly because I had a technical background, which then helped me edit for others and learn as I went and grow and improve. And then after I did that for a while, through Ty at TyDef, he said they needed someone to come in and record engineer a session for a Macmillan title, which is how I started working with them. And then I've recorded engineered for them almost 3 years now, pretty consistently. And I also direct primarily authors, so first-time narrators seems to be my specialty, just because I also do the work. It's easier for me to kind of break it down for them. And I also have been a team at Reaping Audiobooks, which is because I used to do all the editing myself. When I knew that wasn't sustainable, I made the company instead and have two amazing ladies primarily. There's some other people that I work with occasionally, but Alyssa and Lisa, which I think you may have met before, but I work with them. They kind of do the first pass of the audiobook and then I master and plug in the pickups, et cetera, after they've gone through it. So now it's a team effort. And that was the way to grow and get additional streams of income without spreading myself even thinner, if that makes sense. I think that's kind of what I do. Obviously, I still narrate and I still teach people Reaper. I teach classes occasionally and we'll be starting up a class, kind of like a group class, because one-on-one coaching gets to be a little tiring, but that'll come up in the next, on my website, reaperforaudiobooks.com. I shall put that information when that becomes available. So feel free to check in.
So Jennifer, given that you're doing a lot of editing and producing of audiobook content now, let's talk about demos, because a lot of our listeners have questions about that. Sometimes it's a panic point when they're just starting out. Can
Sure.
you talk about how audiobook samples differ from demos of other genres, and how do you go about choosing your samples?
So yeah, they are very different. Usually, just basic terms, the samples that you'll get together for a audiobook will be one sample per, so like a snippet from a book about 3 minutes long and multiple of those from different genres. Whereas like if you're doing a political like VO demo, then you may have little like 5 to 10 second snippets all adding up to a minute and a half or so, showing off different ranges, etc. So with audiobooks, they want a through line, they want storytelling. So that will be like, okay, this is my romantic comedy, multiple voices demo, right? Like a little sample segment of it. So it differs in the sense that they won't get to see, unless they're listening through multiple of your samples, your whole range, if that makes sense. But yeah, basically, it's just a matter of knowing that you are choosing, going on to the next part of your question, you're choosing your samples based on what's going to make you shine the most as a storyteller. So if you really want mystery, thriller, those type of things, then you should really make sure that you've put onto your website those genres. A lot of people think, oh, is that too many? And the answer is probably not. But you do want to name them or label them on your websites very specifically. It's not just first person
young
talks,
yeah.
Right? Like it's, okay, but what is this scene? If I'm casting specifically, you'd want to kind of be in the casting director's head. But like I am going to their website. I'm looking for a comedic romance. Do they have anything on their website or on Audible or wherever they might find your samples that will show that version of themselves? So if you have books that have done those type of things where you know like, oh, this one section would really make me shine, but that's not the sample on Audible, make sure it's on your website. Those type of things would be my advice there.
What about asking a question in the title? I trained with Sean Pratt initially, and one of his suggestions for the samples was to name them with a question that references the text. So let's say it's Jurassic Park. Your sample might be middle-aged, male, first person, will life find a way? Like, because that's the tagline from the movie, right? Is that something you subscribe to?
Sort of. I guess The way I look at it is a more technical standpoint. That is more of an artistic choice standpoint, right? So mm-hmm. that would be if I was selling myself more so in my book to the listener versus the casting director. So the casting director is going to ask some very specific questions of you. And the more you are aware of yourself and what like buckets you can help fill for them, the better, right? So you can name it that, but if you listen to like some of the clubhouses and stuff from the Ahab team, you know, what they describe is you should actually put as many search engine optimization stuff in the title and in your descriptions as possible. So if you become an expert on search engine optimization, fancy SEO language, lingo, but what that is basically when I'm sitting down at a computer asking Google a question. I used to ask Jeeves. That was fun mm-hmm. and many, many moons ago. But now instead of asking Jeeves, and there's going to be so many people that are like, what the heck is this old lady talking about? I'm not that old. Anyway, but Google took over afterwards. But it's basically, what do you type in that search bar to find the thing you're looking for? If you're thinking about databases, if you're thinking about ACX, Ahab, Findaway, etc., what is that person typing into the boxes? Yes, they can filter, but they're also typing in criteria. Think about what they would be searching for and what you are fulfilling for that person that's searching for it. So that's where I would differ a little bit, because no one's going to type in, you know, like life's philosophical questions. So if I only had the choice between one or the other, that would be a good kind of attention grabber, but that's not necessarily going to help the casting director know exactly what they're listening for. A lot of them, like when I've heard them interviewed, casting people, especially with audiobooks, they're like, I only listen, and this is true of most casting, to like the first few seconds, and then I kind of know if that tone fits, right? But if they're looking for something specific, they'll skip around to see where it is in that section that you have done that. So if you say Russian accents, you know, male, female dialogue, romantic, suspense, whatever, they're like, okay, so there's going to be a Russian accent in this clip. It's going to be romantic suspense, and that's what I'm casting for. Let me find the Russian accent and see if it does it justice, etc.
Yeah, that makes sense, especially from a technical aspect. I hadn't thought about SEO, but yeah, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah. And then if you think about it from the like outside of that granular level, if someone's typing in for their like they're the author in this case, they're typing in, OK, I need a male audiobook narrator, you know, mystery thriller. The more you have that on your website or in the descriptions, et cetera, the more likely it is to bounce up towards the top of those Google search results. Mm-hmm. Which will then help you be found by not just the casting people at, you know, PRH, Macmillan, whatever, but also if the author is starting a quest looking at who would I love to have on my book, because then those invariably start conversations if they do get picked up by one of the big houses or if they're doing it themselves.
So sticking to the tech side, you talked about how much you like tech, and I know you have a pretty cool home studio setup. Can we talk about what's in it and how it might have evolved over the years?
Yeah. So I'm sitting in a vocalbooth.com gold series booth. And I got it actually on Craigslist my first year. And the reason I'm mentioning that is because call her Whitney. And the reason is I bought it used off of a music producer. And I was like, oh, you know, the usual questions when you buy something off Craigslist. What did you use it for? And he sends me like this website of like this legit music production company. And his wife was like sitting up front while they're delivering the booth. I got a really killer deal on it. But she's like, you know, Whitney recorded a sample in that booth. I was like Whitney Houston? And now I will never get rid of this booth.
Awesome.
Ever. But I don't think people were like, oh, maybe I should clone. I'm like, you know how many saliva pieces would be? It wouldn't be her. Anyway, mm-hmm. The point is, my booth is Whitney. I have a Neumann 102 mic. I have an Apollo Twin. I work off of a Mac Mini. I don't know. That's very important, says no one. but it has evolved over time. I started, and I use Reaper. I started in Audacity because I took like a class and I only worked on half of a very tiny book in it because like, wow, this is this, you can't do anything in this without it hurting, which is ironic because I think certain other people that are listening might use Audacity. But I am letting everyone know that while it's fine for recording, if you must, don't, because it's destructive, but whatever. If you must, that's fine. But for editing, it was a pain in the tuchus. So I switched to Reaper pretty quickly. But at first I used that because it was a tool I already kind of knew from the yesteryears of, you know, open source software, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But so that evolved pretty quickly. I started with a Steinberg UR22, I want to say, or UR2.
Or 12.
Yeah, there we go. But it's like I outgrew it. And then I got an Audient for like a day and then I didn't like how it monitored. So then I got rid of that and I got the Apollo Twin and that's what I've had since. So I think if I was going to give any advice with that is it's okay to have whatever you have to start. You will outgrow the equipment, but I don't think you should step up, like do tiny steps. I think have a starter equipment that's good enough that'll get you the job done. Then work on your space first. Then once your space is really good and you've outgrown your equipment, then go to the highest level that you think you'll need. And that doesn't mean, you know, get a U87 and a, you know, the most expensive interface. I know I have an Apollo Twin, but there's Solos and stuff like that now too. But like the thing that you will, it'll take you like a decade to outgrow because that's really all you need to kind of invest towards. You usually will start with pretty cheap, right? But I think a lot of people forget to work on their space and they just try and like get better equipment. But better equipment, like this Neumann, I make a joke. I love my mic, but I make a joke that you could hear a fly fart like from 50 miles away with this, how sensitive this mic is, which is its charm, but it's also your downfall if you're recording in your, you know, sort of treated closet.
Yeah, we always get the same advice. I think the one we use, I think I stole it from George Whittam at VOBS, is you can hear a mouse fart from a mile away.
I like the fly better, you know, yeah. Whatever. But yeah, it's a great analogy in either way. I mean, who doesn't like a good fart joke?
Mm. I love the booth story, though. I almost bought a booth for the same reason. Going back to Sean Pratt, when he was moving out of Delaware, he lived in Delaware for a long time, and he moved to Oklahoma. When he was moving, he was selling his booth, which was a Gretschken booth, a great model that's really, really high quality. And not only was it his, but he had bought it from Simon Vance. So somebody bought the booth that both Simon Vance and Sean Pratt have narrated, probably over 3,000 books combined inside. And that,
well,
that has a lot of story.
Look, that would have been a historical moment for you. What do you have?
I work out of a Studio Bricks, same reason, because it's the most important thing.
Yeah, 100%.
The microphone almost doesn't matter, even though Sennheiser Neumann is a sponsor of our show. I've used a Blue Yeti in here. I've used an SM58 for some audiobooks.
Yeah, but even their techs will tell you that if you're recording in a bad space, that is like your downfall. So like, yeah, I know that I love both of those mics that you just mentioned. But like, if I was recording for long form for what we do, the space really matters for audiobooks especially. Mm-hmm. But if you're living in a city like New York, it becomes paramount for short form too. So like pretty much everybody would benefit from a good space, whatever that means. It can just be a really well-treated, you know, bedroom or whatever. Like I had, because I treated my room that my booth was in so much, and I still do, like by that I mean sealing up any cracks around your windows with, you know, acoustic caulking and like putting like the little door sweep things on it to like block some of the sound from coming in, et cetera. Like you have to treat the space it's in just as much as the space. So it's not just the Studio Bricks or the vocal booth. But if you treat the whole room that it's sitting in too, it'll make them shine even more.
Yeah, I totally agree. So jumping back to style a little bit, something that I want to talk about is how you and I have auditioned for duet titles or dual POV, maybe even both on occasion, recorded both on our end, put it together and submitted to either the publisher or the author themselves. I feel like there's an uptick in requests for that, authors wanting both duet and dual point of view. Do you think that's the case? And do you think it'll continue?
I think it is the case in some circles. I think the reason duet is becoming bigger is, how do I say this delicately? Some men are not very good at female voices.
Guilty.
And some women are not very good at male voices. And that is just how our voices work. So I think the duet is kind of stemmed from that, right? Like, especially in romance, you know, if you want to get twittipated from the listening to some, you know, sexy male voice and the woman doesn't sound right, like, you know, that becomes an issue. However, there are so many logistical issues with duet and especially recording them separate that I think if I was speaking to narrators who are thinking about it, number one, always have a good post-production house that knows how to work duets. And that is not a personal plug, although you can use Reaping Audiobooks. We do them all the time. You need to know someone who knows what they're doing. Two, you need to make sure that the two spaces that you're recording in both sound good. I've had a couple where somebody's recording in, like, it sounds almost like they're in a shower. Mm-hmm. And someone's recording, like, in a studio brick. So I'm like, this will never sound the way you want it to sound because it's going to sonically sound so different. So I think that adds to the complexity. And I also feel because there's two ways to record a duet, multicast or duet. You can be sitting on a, you know, Zoom or in the same room and record at the same time with each other and like bounce off of each other kind of like you would with a scripted show, et cetera, like where everyone can hear and you're kind of working together, or you record them in the wild. In the wild is only successful if you really know your co-narrator and how they're going to say a line, and then you can play off of that, like in your mind. But like, it's hard because if there's a line, for example, if that's like, I want you to leave, and that said, she yelled afterwards, that's a problem, right? Like, you didn't know that she yelled.
Yeah.
And, you know, whatever. Like, so that can play into it. Also, if you have a very different narration style than I have, for example, I always go, she said, right? Like, and it's a very gentle she said versus someone who goes, she said. So to sum up, my advice to anyone who's doing duet or dual, and I think your listeners know the difference, but duet is when the point of view of the narrator might shift, but all female dialogue, stereotypically, all female dialogue will be done by the female narrator, all male dialogue by the male presenting narrator, or if it's, you know, like a male-male or whatever the dynamics are, they'll have agreed upon who does each voice and those voices stay consistent throughout, as opposed to you just doing every single voice in the point of view chapter. So in dual, I would do all the voices in a chapter that I'm narrating, no matter who, like what gender, etc. I think dual is still the preferred method, the more likely method, because the cost for the post-production, et cetera, is less. But also, we sometimes don't give the listener credit enough, but the listener can definitely follow along, like if that's the voice and that's the other voice, et cetera, for whichever narrator's working on it. So I personally think that I would love to see like more of a audio drama type resurgence, but with the added budget that should come with that. I think a lot of people do audio dramas for funsies,
yeah,
and like, we're just gonna do it for, you know, craps and giggles, right? So like, I look how I didn't curse on your show. Basically, I think that is the downfall of something that could be really cool. Like if you think about some of the books that have been done with like a full soundscape and full design, those do cost more, and they're not, I mean, there's no reason to do that for like a simple like romance where like you hear street sounds as he walks across. Like that's, I mean, most people can hear street sounds as they're listening to the audiobook anyway, because of world. But regardless, I think that's what I wish the industry would grow into more, kind of the multicast full design. But that wouldn't ever replace single narrator in my head either. There's a room for both. I just wish there was more of a budget thought about for cool things like that, because some books could really benefit from a full soundscape.
Yeah. I think that's coming, by the way. I think maybe...
I think it is too. I just think that the budget for the independent designer, et cetera, like becomes kind of prohibitive. I think for Penguin Random House, Macmillan Podium, et cetera, like they are definitely making a push in that direction of more sound design, particularly in children's books, et cetera. So yeah, it's definitely coming. I just want it to also hit the independent scene, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. So to that end, in general, where do you see the future of voiceover? You think we'll be here in 5 years, or will the machines replace us all?
So, you know, it's interesting. I do have a perspective from the technical side point and from creative. And also my degrees in communication. I went to ASU, Arizona State. But no, my degree is in communication, and that is where I... you know, have this really interesting perspective that comes from all of those things kind of merging. Storytellers in general will always be necessary. It is the first point of how we communicated with each other before there was written word. There was, you know, oracles or storytellers around the fire that would pass down traditions and pass down, you know, the important lessons that their ancestors wanted to keep in the vernacular, right? So I think AI can't replace the big storytelling moments like that. Do I think AI has its place too? Sure, but I think it has its place in the same way that, you know how there used to be abridged audiobooks versus unabridged audiobooks, mm-hmm. right? Like they had both options. I think that's kind of where it is. Like in my world, there'll be a label that says this is an AI book and this is a human read book. And you could potentially have at a slightly lesser price point, the AI version versus the human read version, et cetera. And that would be more for nonfiction books, et cetera, like type stuff. I don't think high fantasy will necessarily be more cost efficient to do with AI voices, because the amount of engineering required to get that to sound even modestly like it should would require a lot of somebody going through it and basically animating, if for lack of a better word, but like animating the book to make it sound the way that it needs to. So that would be too many studio hours to do that. So it would be more cost effective just to have human go in and do thing. That also, like the amount of energy they put into it, I'm assuming you saw Polar Express.
Mm-hmm.
So remember how that was going to be the new way animation was going to work?
Yeah, I remember that.
They were touting it as that. And there's nothing wrong with the movie, like, but the eyes were kind of soulless, right? And that is the hardest part to inject into that. Like that technology will work in the short form, like if I needed it for a special effect or something of that nature. But to replace a full cast like that, like unfortunately our studios are trying to do, which is the whole strike in this moment, but that's not sustainable. That won't give someone the universal feeling of seeing themselves on stage, because it is no longer them. It is basically the ones and zeros ways that they think that person should be interpreted. And that's not how human communication is. So yes, I do think we will still be here in 5 years. I think our roles may slightly change, but that is true of any technological or societal advancement. The same thing happened when they automated, you know, car-like production, et cetera, right? Like a lot of people do lose their jobs in those type of automations, but those jobs shift to other things. So as human beings, we do have to be aware that our ways of making money change, and we will grow and adapt. But there will always be, for storytellers, there'll be our own market. If it's not the big studios, if we have to start building those connections and bringing it directly to the source, there'll still be work for us. We just have to get on board with fighting for our protections, which is why those conversations through the union are so important, even if you're not union, even if the work you're doing is not union. That is still a big body that can help fight the use of our voices, et cetera, and like help us get the rights to it, right? So like, that's why everyone should care about the strikes and about the fights they're doing for AI protections. Because AI is here, it's not coming, it's here. And I think a lot of people are like, oh, it's still years off. I'm like, not technically. If anyone decided right now, they probably could make anything AI. There was a book I worked on recently as an engineer, The Worlds I See, and it's about how AI came to be a part. And I recommend it because it's talking about it from the standpoint of a scientific exploration, which is how AI started, to people with money trying to do things right that save them a buck. And those are two very different ways of viewing the world. A tool is just a tool unless people exploit it. So I think that's the important thing to remember. We still have power over the tool as long as we keep the dialogue open.
Well, that's a fantastic way to look at it. So, Jennifer, unfortunately, we're coming to the end of our time. I appreciate you being here so much. Like I said, we met a couple years ago now at APAC, and it's great to see all of the ways your career has grown. And to that end, how can folks work with you or reach you if they want to hire you?
Yeah, sure. My website is jenblom.com. Has a pretty easy ring to it. You can also find me on the Instas and the Facebooks, etc. If you search my name, you'll find me. And Reaping Audiobooks is my editing company. And I'm happy to help in any way. And always a pleasure talking with you.
Same here. Thanks so much.
In these modern times, every business needs a website. When you need a website for your voice acting business, there's only one place to go. Like the name says, voiceactorwebsites.com. Their experience in this niche webmaster market gives them the ability to quickly and easily get you from concept to live online in a much shorter time. When you contact voiceactorwebsites.com, their team of experts and designers really get to know you and what your needs are. They work with you to highlight what you do. Then they create an easily navigable website for your potential clients to get the big picture of who you are and how your voice is the one for them. Plus, voiceactorwebsites.com has other great resources like their practice script library and other resources to help your voiceover career flourish. Don't try it yourself. Go with the pros. VoiceActorWebsites.com, where your VO website shouldn't be a pain in the you-know-what.
Walgreens, because it's flu season, you live in a place with doorknobs and handrails and, you know, people.
We tried booking a vacation rental on one of those other websites. They don't always tell you everything.
The stars take it to the red carpet.
We are back live from the red carpet.
California leads the way for change in America, and so does Kamala Harris.
Rated M for mature. Claire Redfield.
And who exactly are you?
So, yeah, what hashtag should I use to describe a grown man in a tuxedo wrestling a goat?
And prior to 1933, many of them belonged to a variety of political parties that were now outlawed in Germany.
This is the story of how Q got curly. Quinn was crazy about curls. Curly fries, curly straws, curly-haired dogs.
Hey, J. Michael here. Thanks for listening to the VO Meter podcast. It's one of my favorites. If you're looking for a great demo like the ones you just heard, check out jmcdemos.com for more information.
All right, and we're back. Thanks to Jennifer for that. Jennifer and I met several years ago at APAC and have stayed in touch. Like we talked about, we tried to do some auditions together. I haven't landed any, but maybe we'll continue to do that. And it was a pleasure to hear about her efforts with Reaping Audio.
Absolutely. It was a pleasure talking to you, Jennifer, for the 10 minutes before the storm kicked me out. But thank you, Paul and Jennifer, for trudging on without me.
Yeah, for those of you wondering why Sean suddenly just disappeared, it wasn't because we kicked him out, although Jennifer said she wanted to. No, I'm just kidding.
I am really annoying.
Technical difficulties. We were going to make it seamless, but since Sean let the cat out of the bag, we may as well talk about it. And Jennifer and I finished it up together.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I had a, I was stricken with muteness, but anyways, thank you so much, Jennifer. Love talking with you. Love to have you back. All right, so that wraps up this episode of the VO Meter.
Measuring your voiceover progress.
We're still lining up guests for our future episodes, so keep your ears peeled for that, and you'll hear us in the next one.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the VO Meter. To follow along, visit us at www.vometer.com.
We'd also love to hear your comments or suggestions for the show. Or if you have a questionable gear purchase, tell us all about it on our Facebook page or on Twitter at the VO Meter.